Greetings, conversationalists everywhere. It's Eric Erickson here, the Eric Erickson Show from my flagship station, WSB in Atlanta, across the fruited plain. The phone number is 877-97-ERIC, 877-973-7425. So one of the most hotly contested congressional races in the United States of America is going to take place very close to where I am. The 6th Congressional District of Georgia is a district that had been Republican. John Ossoff tried to take it several years ago, lost to Karen Handel in a special election. The Democrats captured it in 2018 and were barely able to hang on to it in 2020. Redistricting is upon us. Rumors are afoot. The district will be made a little more Republican. It's the sort of seat Republicans have to take nationwide in order to beat Nancy Pelosi and take back the House of Representatives. There are a number of people running in this seat. One of them announced today, Jake Evans, who joins me by phone. Welcome.
Good to be here, Eric. Great, good to be here.
So tell us, first of all, I mean, the big picture here of why you're running.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, for those that don't know me, my name is Jake Evans. I am very blessed to grow up in Georgia politics. And this year I was very blessed to marry a beautiful bride. We got married in March. And as we live in Cobb County, as we look at the future, we look at a very endangered America. We look at an America where Joe Biden is trying to make America like the rest of the world, like the socialist countries of the world, when we should be making the rest of the world like America. And that is something that is very, very disturbing to me. I could stand by, but we're not going to stand by. It's time to stand up and fight for the future of our country and for our children to have the opportunity to pursue the American dream, just like we did. And so I feel a calling, and it's time to put myself forward in what will be a very difficult fight. As you said earlier, the 6th Congressional District is a battleground district, but it is a district that is not represented by the proper person, and that is Lucy McBath, who has consistently tried to erase our culture, our values, our American identity, said that we are an inherently racist country, and that's something that I don't think anyone in the 6th District or more generally Americans should stand up for or put up with. And so what I am going to do is I'm going to deliver a bold conservative value campaign about big ideas that sells to the American people and delivers to the American people. And so I have generated what I call an acronym, which is SELL. Number one, security. We got to protect domestic security, which is we need to protect our local law enforcement. National security, we need to support our troops abroad, and we need to provide them with the supplies they need to keep us safe at home. And I will fully put forward Reagan's motto, which is peace by strength. And we need to protect our family, our communities. Families are the bedrock of the United States of America, and is something that we have to make sure our children are growing up in two-person households, which is one of the number one indicators for success. The E in SELL is for education. I'm a big proponent of free market principles, and we need to inject free market principles via school choice and return the choice of schools to American families and away from the federal government. And we need to eradicate critical race theory, which divides children at 4, 5, 6 years old, is something that we can't withstand to allow to go forward, because we need a united America, united children, because if we look at the aggressive China, and as they become more strengthened, our future generations have to be educated. My first L is for liberty, economic liberty, personal liberty, religious liberty. We need to protect the liberties that this country was founded on. And last is L. Limited government, limited regulation, limited government intrusion. These are the foundational principles which enable the United States of America to be the best country on earth, that create creativity, economic ingenuity, and that's what distinguishes us from the rest of our peers. So we have a very bold conservative big idea campaign, and we are fully prepared to, what I say, usher in the great comeback to retake America.
Now, let me go back to something you said about Lucy McBath. I don't know that this, amazingly, I think if a Republican had said something like this, it would be national news. We'd still be talking about it. But she was caught on tape, off record, speaking candidly, as all politicians do off the record, and said she did think that this country is founded in racism. I'm kind of shocked that she said this at a donor group. I realize it's what a lot of progressives think these days, but for her to say it as a candidate in that district is something.
All right. No, you're exactly right, Eric. And, you know, what the liberals currently do is their only tool to invigorate their base and harm our base is divide and conquer. Is through divide and conquer. And the way they do that is they consistently bring up race when race is not an issue. And her goal is she knows the only way she can beat the Republican Party or a party that consistently beats the Democrats on ideas, on policy, on results, is to divide us. And we can't succumb to that. But the greatest country on earth is something that we have to protect. It's something that we cannot and should not be ashamed of. Have we overcome adversity? Yes. But I will guarantee you every individual at some point has made mistakes and they've overcame those mistakes and they've become better. And that's exactly what this country has become and is today.
Now, Jake, a lot of folks who run for Congress start talking about the national big picture stuff, but also all politics is local. And there are a lot of issues. The 6th Congressional District, for those listening who don't know where it is, it's the northern metro area of Atlanta. It is an increasingly populated area. I think that area of the state now is listed as number 8 in the nation for worst traffic. You've got a massive number of schools there, but some of which are going down the critical theory path. I mean, in the all politics is local vein, what do you see in the 6th Congressional District as kind of the big issues that voters need to know?
The big issues are education, is crime. People move to the 6th Congressional District, and as you just said, Eric, we've got East Cobb, some of the best schools in the state of Georgia. We've got North Fulton, some of the best schools in the state of Georgia. And people move to East Cobb because they want to raise a family. And they want to raise a family in a safe suburb. And we have to maintain that in order for the 6th District to maintain its distinguishing characteristics. And how do we do that? As I said earlier, security. We have to support our law enforcement. Being a police officer is one of the hardest jobs that exists. You are putting your life on the line. My cousin is actually a deputy sheriff, and I was talking to him about this back whenever all the BLM stuff was going on. And he gave me a great analogy, which kind of touched me, which he said, if I'm driving down the interstate and someone commits a crime, and I can pull that person over, or I can let them go. If I pull them over and they flee or they attempt to in any way be threatening, I have to worry about baseless accusations that I was doing it for racist motives, which they weren't. He has to worry about the person in any way coming at him. And we live in a world where a lot of police officers say, you know what, I'm just going to let this person go. Mm-hmm. And that has created the massive crime wave that we have throughout Atlanta. And it is bleeding throughout our communities. And we have to stop it. We're a country based upon law and order. And if we let that be eroded, then our whole community and the basis upon which this country is founded will equally be eroded. We can't let that happen.
Now, this district, how do you see redistricting shaping up? Because you, Megan Hansen, and the others who are jumping into this, you're kind of flying blind in that you've got David Ralston saying they're not even going to start drawing the maps until frost is on the pumpkins, which means, I mean, end of October, probably beginning of November. And then you've got, a primary that jumps out at you in March or May. So how do you see this shaping up?
There is a lot of uncertainty, but I'm in this race not for political opportunism. I'm not in this race in hopes that I'm going to get an easy district. I'm in this race to deliver for the people of the 6th District. The people of the 6th District demand and deserve good and proper representation that's going to deliver results, that's going to keep the 6th District, which is one of the best districts in the country, in my opinion, that way. And if we don't fight the liberal attack on America, a liberal attack on the values that made America the greatest country on earth, we're going to lose this fight. And I'm not going to let that happen under my watch. So I'm not going to stand by. I'm going to stand up and I'm going to deliver for the people of the 6th District.
Jake, listen, I appreciate you stopping by. Good luck to you on the campaign trail. You got it is a very odd district, Frank. And I don't mean that in a pejorative way. It's You got parts of DeKalb County, the northern DeKalb. You've got northern Fulton. You got the parts of Cobb, and you've got, what is it? Are there parts of Gwinnett in there, or is it just Fulton in there? It's a very expansive, compact district, but a bunch of people in it.
That's right. Yeah, you know, it's East Cobb, North Fulton, and it goes into DeKalb. None of Gwinnett, but it is a very, very expansive district, and it's a very diverse district from an economic, racial standpoint. But I'm honored for the opportunity to put myself forward and try to fight for the people of the six and deliver for them.
Well, Jake, listen, thank you very much for stopping by. Best of luck to you out there. I'm pulling up the map here. Yeah, it's the district. It runs that portion of, for those of you familiar with this area of the state of Georgia, it runs on the border of Fulton and Gwinnett County there, just north of Berkeley Lake and Duluth. It covers Milton, the cities of Milton and Alpharetta and Roswell, Mountain Park, parts of Cobb County, Sandy Springs, Dunwoody, Doraville. And it is right there around 285 on the north side of the city. There are going to be a number of people who vie for this. The complicating factor for all of these candidates is that redistricting hasn't happened. Now, I've got some well-placed sources in the legislature who tell me they're still looking at some of the dynamics here, because you got the Supreme Court decision on voting rights that just came out. And how do you shape up these districts? Because you can't dilute minority districts. And the question is, do you draw the 6th and 7th in together and sacrifice it and make it a Democratic district and then force McBath and Carolyn Bordeaux to fight each other? Or do you make the 7th more Democrat, racially diverse, with Gwinnett County and DeKalb County, and then make the 6th congressional district a little more white? It's already majority white, so that protects them there without any claims of racism. There are a lot of different ways the Republicans can look at this in the state of Georgia, and every state right now is having this. Now, I bring up that redistricting issue because we've got the redistricting issue in Texas. The Democrats who fled Texas have a problem. The Texas Democrats have to go home to deal with redistricting. I'm assuming they thought about this. They can't leave forever. They've tried to deprive a quorum of the state legislature in Texas, so the state legislature can't pass their voting reform bill. They have to go home for redistricting. Also, if they don't go home before the 1st of September, their legislators and their staffers are going to get no pay. Governor Greg Abbott vetoed the Texas legislative pay legislation. So starting September 1st, nobody gets paid in the legislature, including all the staff. So if they want their staff to get paid, they got to go home and they got to deal with this issue, which is why I think this is grandstanding. Additionally, you've got redistricting in Texas. The way Texas law works, if the state legislature cannot agree to legislative maps, then a super committee is formed of the statewide elected officials, including the governor, lieutenant governor, attorney general, and others. They're all Republican. It's a death wish for the Democrats if those guys draw the map. So I suspect what we're going to see is the Democrats ultimately go back to Texas, and this is why it's all performance. This whole thing that's happening with the Texas Democrats going to Washington is all a bit of performance, because they've got to go deal with redistricting in the same way Georgia, North Carolina, Florida, and every other state out there has to deal with redistricting. The Democrats want a seat at the table, and I suspect what's going to happen is some of the Democrats who fled to Washington are probably going to sneak back and give the Republicans a quorum in exchange for getting favorable districts drawn. This hour of the program, this hour right now, the one you're listening to at this very moment, is brought to you by First Liberty Building and Loan, the Frost family. If you know them, tell them I said hi. They're wonderful, 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 wonderful people. And they're in Noonan. It doesn't matter where you are nationwide, though. They want to help you. They want to help your business become a bigger business. If your business wants to grow, you need access to loans. You go to First Liberty Building and Loan. So many banks are telling you no right now because banks are super risk adverse. The Frost family's been doing this since the 90s. They want to help your business. They know how to help your business. They want to get your no to a yes with them. They do their own lending. Go to FirstLibertyGA.com. FirstLibertyGA.com if your business wants to grow. FirstLibertyGA.com. Thanks to them for sponsoring the program. Y'all, I just saw, Ryan Reynolds has a new movie out. And the guy really is just, he seems like a very likable person. I have no idea. But he's got a very great sense of humor, and he's doing a movie review of his new movie, but it's him dressed as Deadpool. He's also Deadpool. And then he's got Korg, the rock guy from Thor. the crossover event with a bit of a plug that everybody else was too busy at Disney Plus. I'm just gonna say that it is. I enjoy the level of interaction that you can get now with celebrities making fun of themselves. And, you know, there aren't a lot of celebrities who do make fun of themselves, but there are some. I know some people who cannot make fun of themselves at all. And it's just, if you can't laugh at yourself, that's one of the things that I've noticed, frankly, with Stacey Abrams. So back in 2018, I got the bright idea of saying, you know what? I want to interview every single candidate running for governor in Georgia, as long as they met some polling criteria. Because, you know, there are always the fringy people who sign up to run for governor who they don't have any money. They're not going to get any votes, and half of them are crazy. And it's like, I don't want to interview those people. But the legit candidates running for governor for the state of Georgia, I want to have them in, not for a hardball, like combative interview, just who are you? Why are you running? What should people know about you, and why you and not everyone else? Those four questions, spent an hour with every candidate. And I interviewed every Republican and I interviewed every Democrat. And I have to tell you, in all honesty, Stacey Abrams was a fantastic interview. I interviewed her. She was hesitant. We let her, you know, with every candidate, we said, bring your people. It's not my people. I don't want you to think I have an agenda. We want you to be comfortable. We literally do just want to hear from you, not a combative gotcha interview. So you bring your people, let them be the ones on in the crowd. And we made her as comfortable as possible. And she was very willing to do it. One of the things I found very endearing about Stacey Abrams, just bear with me here. Just hear me out before you start yelling at me. I can hear you already yelling at the radio. You squish, squish. No, seriously. She could make fun of herself. A lot of her jokes were self-deprecating, and I have for years been around a ton of politicians, and they could not make jokes about themselves. George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush both could make jokes about themselves. Barack Obama never could. Donald Trump could make some jokes about himself, although not as much as the Bushes. I know a lot of Republican politicians who will remain nameless who have a hard time making jokes about themselves. I find it endearing when a politician can make a joke about themselves because they kind of realize they can't take it too seriously. So, for example, Brian Kemp notoriously can make a joke about himself. The whole idea of him living in the governor's mansion I think he finds it somewhat funny as well that he lives in this very pompous house that Jimmy Carter lived in, and the same furnishings are still in the house from when Carter lived there. But I know some people who have been in that governor's mansion who, or wanted to be in that governor's mansion, who could not laugh at themselves, who were just, they rose to the moment, to such a degree that their nose went up their own butt, backside. But Abrams, I bring this up because Abrams over time seems like she's lost the ability to take a joke and make a joke, that she now believes the press. And that's always a fatal flaw for candidates, regardless of party, by the way, regardless of party. When you believe your own press, it becomes a real problem because you lose your ability to laugh at yourself. And when you lose your ability to laugh at yourself, you lose your ability to laugh with other people at the ridiculousness of what you're doing. And frankly, a lot of politics is very ridiculous. It was very striking to me seeing this change from her in 2018 to later. Part of it was the outcome of the race. She was so convinced she could do it, and she didn't, and then concocted the voter suppression mythology. But in any event, we will take your calls when we come back. Hello there. It is Eric Erickson here. If I sound distracted, it's because I know I'm going fly fishing in 30 minutes for a few days. I will be out of here. Alan Sanders will be in for me. Thank you to him for filling in advance. I'm going to ruffle some feathers. There are certain topics you come across that you just know. They're not political. They're not even cultural. They're not about theology. You just know you're going to make some people mad when you talk about them. And I'm about to. Three people walk into a bar. A CrossFitter, a vegan, and an atheist. And the only reason we know is because they made sure everybody in the bar knew. But there was a fourth person at the bar. And that fourth person insisted on dominating the conversation. That person was the owner of an air fryer. Y'all, it is the modern craze of our time, an air fryer. It is a marketing gimmick. It doesn't actually fry. It's a convection oven. Convection ovens have been around for a very long time. In fact, you might just have one called a toaster oven. Now, the only reason I bring this up is because I was looking at the wire cutter. Now, if you don't know what the wire cutter is actually an ingenious website. In fact, it was so ingenious, it was making so much money, the New York Times bought it. So what is the wire cutter? The wire cutter is a review site, and it reviews everything. I mean, it reviews things from condoms and adult sex toys to toaster ovens to mattresses to socks to ceiling fans to vacuum cleaners, you name it. It reviews everything. And the wire cutter uses experts in their field along with editors who try out stuff for a while. They take their time with their reviews and then they write about the reviews and they make their money by saying, this is the best in class based on our reviews and experts and everyone else. They buy their own items. Their items are not sent to them. They buy the items. So they're not just saying here, you review this and we'll pay you if you give us a good review and stuff. They actually go out and they use their items. I tend to trust the wire cutter when it comes to buying a lot of stuff. Now, there are some things that you just have to experiment with yourself, like a bed. Like a mattress. There's a place in Atlanta, Sleep Galleria. You know, for years I used a big mattress store that I used to even advertise for. It's gotten so complicated to buy mattresses. A buddy of mine has a friend who runs a place called Sleep Galleria, and they got one in Johns Creek. They've got several others in the metro Atlanta area. And he's like, go to this guy. Stop complaining on air about me. Have y'all tried to buy a mattress? It's ridiculous. You buy mattresses. They've got the memory foam mattresses, the latex mattresses, and they're all really the same material under different brand names. I want a firm mattress, but now you have luxury firm, super firm, hyper firm, ultra firm, firm. I just want a firm mattress. I'm fat. I don't want to sink into my mattress. And then some people want the plush mattress, the soft mattress, the pillow top mattress. I did have one friend of mine years ago who sold beds who said, never get the pillow top mattress. Just get yourself a mattress topper that when it flattens out, you can get a new one. If you get the pillow topper, you're stuck with the mattress. And that was genius. And I don't even want the pillow top. I just want a fur mattress. So I went to the Sleep Galleria place. I went to the one up in Johns Creek, Georgia. And the guy was just so helpful. And he's like, we keep the best sellers in stock. We don't fill up the store with a bunch of mattresses like a lot of places do, so it overwhelms you. Just these are the best in class based on a lot of objective ratings from people, not just ours. We're not making in-house commissions off of pointing you towards this particular mattress. And I got a fantastic Stearns & Foster mattress, which I tend to like anyway. They're well-built. They're a little more pricey, but they last forever. And it's firm. I highly recommend the Sleep Galleria place. They were so helpful. But so that's why I like the wire cutter, because they're super helpful. They're not getting kickbacks to steer you in a particular product. They're just reviewing everything. They're saying, based on our reviews, this is it. Well, someone put this article on air fryers, and as the wire cutter says, and they're the experts, so you don't have to take it from me. You can take it from the wire cutter. An air fryer is a BS marketing scheme. It is a toaster oven that's now pod-shaped, and the problem is that in the pod-shaped toaster ovens that don't fry stuff, they spin hot air around. The way their shape tends to spin the air so much that it makes the results very inconsistent. You get better results with a toaster oven. You should get a toaster oven. Like, I've got a toaster oven. It's a smart toaster oven called a June. You put in like your bacon and it has a camera inside and says, this looks like bacon. Do you want it crispy or chewy? And you push which one you want. My kid likes chewy. I like crispy. And it takes care of it. It's fantastic. It works great. The air fryer is just a marketing scheme. It is a total gimmick. It's not really frying stuff. Like, I have a friend of mine who likes to fry French fries in his air fryer like you're not frying French fries in your air fryer. You are sending them into a convection toaster oven that you just think is frying the food because maybe you've sprayed some oil on them and it gets the thing gross on the inside. It's not really frying food. Stop lying to yourself and to others and stop telling everybody. I don't know why there's a cult of air fryers these days. There is literally, my gosh, people, the number of people I know is, have you gotten an air fryer? It's so much healthier. Well, you got a freaking convection oven in your house. You have a large-scale air fryer in your house. Use the damn thing to cook the food instead of using this stupid little air fryer that takes up what? Space. Where? On your counter. Why? Because you have plenty of other things competing for space on your counter. You don't need a tiny convection oven when you've already probably got two of them in your house. The air fryer gimmick is proof that people can be sold anything. Why? Say it with me, people. Because people are stupid. I feel better having gotten that off my chest now. I have friends who love their air fryers. They are just getting played by marketing schemes that know them. The whole healthy eating craze as well. Get an air fryer. You're not frying in deep fat. You're frying with the heat of the wind. That means, guess what? You're not frying. Okay, I can move on now. I'm going to move on to bassinets. I've been dying to get to this story. The snoo. I think it's the snoo. Maybe it's the snow, but I think it's the snoo. The snoo is a $1,500 robotic bassinet. For those of you who don't know what a bassinet is, it's not actually a bass player or a musical instrument. It's essentially a fancy crib. It rocks your children to sleep. And this is a robotic one. Now, I have to read you part of this. This is in the Washington Post. 7 weeks after Jessica Scalia gave birth to her son, James, the situation was both extremely common and completely dire. Her son was not sleeping, which meant she and her husband were not sleeping either. I was desperate, she says. I was willing to try anything. So at the ungodly hour, on one particular bad night, she made an impulse decision to rent a snoo. A nearly $1,500 robotic bassinet that automatically soothes fussy babies with motion and white noise. Now, I gotta say, I'm sympathetic to this because I was sitting on my back porch after probably a third glass of bourbon with Philip at Christmas, and he said he hadn't seen the movie 1917, and I impulse bought a 90-inch TV from Best Buy. I had to rent a U-Haul to actually get the TV because the damn thing was so big. But it wasn't a $1,500 robotic bassinet. It was actually useful, a TV. Nonetheless, Ms. Scalia had heard about the snoo, which used artificial intelligence and sensors to listen for a baby's cry and rock the baby back to sleep. She had written off the device as overhyped. I'd never even heard of snoo. Of course, I don't have small kids anymore. Mine are at the annoying age of like teenagers. Nonetheless, the company behind the snoo, the happiest baby, claimed that it could give parents an extra 2 hours of sleep each night, which sounded like a fantasy to Scalia. And friends who used it evangelized, bragged, proselytized about their sleep-gifted infants. Before I had a baby, I was just like, this is ridiculous, says Scalia, who lives in Nashville. Who needs to spend this much money on a bassinet, especially when there are so many more affordable options? But at the end of the first week with the snoo, Scalia, age 29, had become a believer. James, who had previously never slept more than an hour and a half at a time, could sleep 4 hours at a time. Meanwhile, in Minnesota's Twin Cities, colleagues were asking Alicia House, age 35, how her newborn son, Harton, was sleeping. You know, in a sarcastic, sort of snarky way, she says, almost like they know in their minds, oh, you're not sleeping and this must be really rough. Little did they know, House had started Harton in the snoo a few days after he was born. Actually, really well, she responded, delighted that this was both an unexpected answer and a truthful one. And over in Lafayette, California, I'm sorry for those of you in Georgia, Lafayette, California, Chelsea Azevedo, 30, found the snoo to be so effective for her daughter Sophie that some nights she found herself awoken by the need to pump breast milk for the baby while the baby still slept. I was so jealous of her sleeping in the snoo, she says. few other technological advancements have inspired the same level of reverence among parents bordering on religious devotion as the Snoo. Invented by pediatrician Harvey Karp, the Snoo automates the principles that Karp has long taught in his book, The Happiest Baby on the Block, that babies can be prompted to sleep with stimuli that mimic the conditions of the womb, including swaddling and swinging. Now, a friend of mine is texting me to tell me it is Snow, S-N-O-O. I'm going with Snoo because this whole damn article is ridiculous, and there's a point to me focusing on this article. Now, the New York Times, this is the Washington Post, the style section, would not just be running a promo article for the Snoo bassinet that rocks your child, that deduces the cries that your child is having, can interpret those cries for you, and rock the child in such a way based on those cries to put your child to sleep. And by the way, this device apparently does work. It has a cult following. It apparently really does what it's looking for. If you've got a newborn who cannot sleep and you have $1,500 to throw around, the Snoo is for you. I'm not getting paid. It's not an ad. There's a point. I must now read you the title of this story. The Snoo is a $1,500 bassinet and a touchstone for judgment, anxiety, and privilege. That's right, my friends. That's the whole story here. They introduce you to what the Snoo is, and neither you nor I have ever heard of it. And then they want us to know that rich white parents, they're feeling anxiety and guilt for buying something to put their children to sleep. For some parents, the Snoo has become a vehicle for judgment, anxiety, and privilege. The fancy bassinet has a way of separating even well-to-do parents into the Snoos and the Snoo-nots. The members of the former group don't help their case much when they brag about all the restful sleep they're getting. Gosh, we're at this point again. We have yet another cultural touchstone where people are upset and angry because other people are able to afford something they're not. This is we live in a jealous, covetous society. One of the Ten Commandments is thou shalt not covet. You shall not want what your neighbors have that you don't have. You should not try to keep up with the Joneses. And not only now are people not keeping up with the Joneses, but they're making the Joneses feel guilty that they're able to do something the rest of us aren't. You know what? Jealousy is a potent, potent force. And our society these days is designed to provoke jealousy, the wants and the like. It's just really, really fascinating that here we are in this situation where we got so much jealousy from so many people that we've got an entire article in the Washington Post about a device I certainly had not heard of it until I saw this article, that they're actually doing a cultural critique by virtue of selling this device, that if you can afford this device, somehow you're too white, powerful, and privileged. Somehow, because of your purchase of this device, you're the problem, and you should feel guilty. No, you know what? I am very open about the fact that one day, if I'm ever successful in talk radio, I would like a beach house and a NetJet subscription, or Flex Jets or something, a private jet subscription. I got somebody who listens who works for FlexJets, which I never heard of until he reached out to me. They're an Atlanta-based company, and they do private air travel, too. I just don't want to get yelled at in the airport while I'm peeing anymore. That happens. One day, and when I have it, I will share it with my friends and family. I will be generous, but I'm not there yet. But you know what? I know people who are. I know a guy who has not only has a private plane, but missed a meeting with me one time because a new restaurant opened in Hong Kong and he decided he wanted to take his wife to dinner. So they literally flew to Hong Kong to a restaurant. Was I jealous? No, no. I was like, wow, that's really impressive. One day, I don't hate the man because he could do that. I know a guy who has a house on the beach and he has a house in the mountains. Do I hate him? No, he shares with other people. Very nice guy. I don't hate him. But yet in today's society, we are designed to program to by the media to hate and be jealous of people who have made it, who have more money than us, who are more successful than us in similar careers. And you've got to overcome that temptation. The fact that someone buys a device that allows their children to sleep and it helps them sleep and helps them function, you should not have any guilt that you can afford that. You should have no guilt at all. In fact, when your children outgrow it, maybe consider giving it to someone or selling it for cheap if it makes you feel better. I've just got a listener, Andrew, just emailed me. No guilt here. The snooze, the most amazing thing ever. We didn't have it when my kids were that age. I would have bought one. I would have taken out a loan to buy one. And yet the Washington Post thinks that if you have one, you're a privileged person who should feel bad about yourself. No, no. Stop feeling guilty because you can afford nice stuff. Some of us can't. I can afford more than some of the people who work with me. And then there are things that I can't afford that I really want one day. But none of you should feel guilty or envious or jealous of the other people. You're just in different walks in life. The whole idea that we've all got to be equitable or have equality there, life ain't fair, folks. And none of us have equal outcomes. So get over yourself. This is more a damning indictment on the reporter who wrote it than on the people who bought the snoo so they can get a good night's sleep. Clearly, the reporter is jealous. Y'all, I am today years old learning that I can order my waffle fries at Chick-fil-A well done. This is a useful tip wherever you are in North America. I had no idea. I mentioned offhandedly yesterday that I'm just not a fan of Chick-fil-A waffle fries because they're typically very floppy and slightly greasy. And I want a fry that's crisp. There's this barbecue restaurant I mentioned called Old Clinton Barbecue down in Middle Georgia. It literally is just this hole in the wall of the building. Looks like one gust of wind and it'll all fall over. But they have really crispy crinkle fries. And I wish that Chick-fil-A had crispier waffle fries. I am today years old knowing that Chick-fil-A, you can order your waffle fries well done. And it'll take a few more minutes to get your order to you. But they will actually make your waffle fries crispy. And in fact, if you use the Chick-fil-A app, you can put it in the notes that you want your waffle fries well done, and they will do well done waffle fries for you. I had no idea. Apparently, you can also do this with your chicken sandwich and ask them to cook it a little longer. I'm blown away by this. Chick-fil-A, they are the greatest people. That they will let you do this. I'm going to order well done waffle fries, and I will report back when I come back from vacation. I want crispy waffle fries from Chick-fil-A, and apparently I can get them by ordering them well done. I hope you're as intrigued as I am by this.